You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Top of the fifth inning. Line drive. That is a beautiful piece of hitting. Duffy's going to score. That one almost all the way to the wall. Here comes Mayfield. Two runs are in. 6-1 Halos.
Zook was pumped up today. What a swing right center.
I must be crazy on 420 because I've made the same mistake at the top of both of our segments.
Broadcasting amateur over
where
to my right.
I tried to start talking when I know we are leading in.
Yeah.
With a soundbite.
Just ruining our show.
It's awful.
By talking over the Angels broadcast. The same Angels broadcast that thought that Garrett Cole wouldn't give out MacBooks to the kids.
I will never forget that. And we're going to get to that in a second. And that sound is sound that you want to be here for.
It's
pretty bad.
I like how you have this same problem that I used to. Now it's just not my problem anymore. Because I used to forget all the time that we would bump into segments with audio. And my problem was I would turn the microphone on and talk over it. See, the good thing for you haven't done that yet.
Sean, because Sean, our producer, Sean Mabe.
Because you're a real diva and you have someone turn your mic on for you.
No, Sean just knows better. The
sure.
Astros.
That's it.
The Astros struggling last night. We saw a great opening day from them. The offense was on fire. Other than Jose Altuve getting hurt, the home opener was awesome. Yesterday was a little bit different. Framber Valdez really didn't look like himself. Couldn't make it through the fifth inning. He allowed 6 earned runs. So rough night for Framber. And of course, the offense just really couldn't get going.
I still, like a lot of you, am of the belief that the offense can eventually get cooking. But this stove sucks. It's not a good stove. This is one of those things where, like, at my terrible apartment complex that I live at, where there's no laundry machines and there's all sorts of issues that I have every single day that they have yet to fix, I would be asking for a new stove here. But I feel like the stove is eventually going to come.
Right.
With Framber, do I have to accept that this is who he is?
This is the ceiling.
Just inconsistency. It's wild card. It's, hey, he can give you what he gave in the first game of the year where he looked lights out, or he hasn't made it through the fifth inning his last two starts. And in those last two starts, 9 walks. He had 4 walks last night, and this time got killed in the run department as well. 6 earned runs over 4 1/3. He's not your ace. Optimally, he's your third best pitcher behind Justin Verlander and Lance McCullers. But McCullers is not going to be back for a while. Verlander, you have to wonder about just how long this year he will be able to maintain the level he's pitching at, just given what he has gone through. You're going to have to manage him a little bit more. Framber is supposed to take that step forward. And I feel like it's the same Framber Valdez that we saw awesome in the American League Championship Series against the Red Sox, awful in the World Series against the Braves.
We'll see what happens. Jake Odorizzi on the mound tonight, which doesn't make me feel excellent about tonight. But look, I mean, with the Lance McCullers Jr. injury, with Jose Altuve's injury, there are a lot of questions right now. But I don't think it's anything catastrophic by any stretch of the imagination. We don't have a timeline on Jose Altuve's injury. Yesterday in the pregame, Dusty Baker laughed when one of the reporters said, so is there a possibility he could be back, you know, tomorrow? And Dusty laughed and said, no, despite what he says, no possibility for that. So they are playing it safe with Jose Altuve. We don't have the, I haven't heard a like official diagnosis or a timeline, but you have to think that they're going to want to be conservative with it as they usually are.
Well, yeah, there's no point in rushing Jose Altuve back, but I can understand being tempted to given the struggles at the plate. Because, I mean, for the most part this year, outside of 2 games against the Angels, you've scored 4 runs or less. And when you have the kind of firepower that the Astros have, I mean, this is like a crappy Death Star. Like, something's not working. Again, maintenance. What's happening? And I assume things will get better. But at some point, we're going to probably be looking at ourselves and wondering, okay, well, maybe they're going to get better, but not to the degree that we have grown accustomed to, where this whole lineup, 1 through 9, is very, very scary. At this point in time, your most consistent player, amazingly, has been Jeremy Peña, who moved into the leadoff spot last night. He scored 2 runs, and he had his second home run of the year. But I mean, you weren't expecting that from Peña, and I don't expect this to last from Peña either.
It's nice that he's there, though, so that you're not putting up 7-0 for a game. Jeremy Peña has looked great. Again, how long will that last? How long will this offensive slump in general last? I don't know, but Peña has been a nice surprise for the Astros.
Yes, he has. And I'll admit, at least to this point, that I was wrong about the early expectations. But the big key for any young player is how do you handle your first slump? And he hasn't really gone through that yet. It'll happen because one of the things that I've noticed and I've also seen baseball writers observe is that he swings at a lot of stuff out of the zone. And that can be used against you unless you are some crazy person. Like, remember Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Excuse me, Vladimir Guerrero. Why did I say Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Vladimir
because
Guerrero.
He has a son named Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Sure, but Vladimir Guerrero Sr. was my favorite non-Boston Red Sox player growing up. And I loved that he would swing at a ball could have bounced in the dirt before even reaching home plate. And if it was within reach of his bat, the guy would swing at it. He swung at everything, and he could smash absolutely everything. And Peña could be that guy, but he probably isn't. And you have to be a little bit more disciplined with what you swing at and what you don't. And to this point, it hasn't hurt, but I do think at some point pitchers are going to adjust to that element of his game. He swings at a lot of stuff.
Meanwhile, Gerrit Cole cannot get it going. We heard all of the things about how great he was going to be in New York, and the Yankees give him this historic contract.
So let's dump on him.
The emotional press conference, and he has not been able to produce. Coincidentally, this was around the same time that MLB cracked down on the sticky stuff. Gerrit Cole only making
it stuff
through 1 2/3 inning. It was the shortest outing of his career, and it was not good. What was even worse, you could argue, was that in addition to Gerrit Cole being bad, there was the Angels broadcast team that got by the parody account.
Yeah, they did. It's never fun. You always got to be wary, though. Always got to be on your toes. Because next thing you know, you might be retweeting something from Adam Schefter, but like with, instead of a...
Yeah, like on draft
S,
night.
There's a 5.
Yeah.
Right. Like that.
And they're not verified, and people still get fooled by the fake Rappaport accounts, the fake Adam Schefter accounts.
Let's be honest, though. It just,
check for the blue check mark.
You can be verified with the blue check mark and still completely full of crap. I mean, I could tweet out something that wasn't actually a breaking story, and I would be like, I was just messing around, guys. There was somebody else, too, the person who was saying that the Deshaun Watson trade was a done deal.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, that guy has a blue check mark for some reason, but...
Some blogger.
Was he right? No.
So there's an account called New York Porch Sports on Twitter, and it says in the bio that it is a satire page. And this account tweets out, Gerrit Cole promised an underprivileged school he'd donate 600 MacBooks if he went over 2 innings tonight. The Yankees ace went 1.2.
Could he donate
now,
me one?
Now, this is a joke, obviously, for many reasons. First of all, Gerrit Cole, I'm not saying he's not involved in the community, but like I never heard him doing these types of things. Second of all, as we've talked about, 2 innings. Very random and not something any pitcher is like, yeah, I'll donate if I make 2 innings. Maybe if you throw a no-hitter, sure. A perfect game, absolutely. But this didn't make any sense. However, a certain broadcast team bought it, and here is that audio.
A corner. He went into the game, no wins, no losses, ERA 5.59 in his first 2 starts. And he had promised to an underprivileged school in New York before that ball game that he would donate 600 MacBooks if he went 2 innings or more tonight in that ball game. Certainly a nice gesture on his part. He ended up getting taken out of the game going 1 2/3.
Wow.
And in 1 2/3, he gave up 1 hit. He walked 5.
They're really lively, those
two. I mean, he says certainly a nice gesture. Here's the problem. Before you say something on the radio, and I believe in giving people grace, this broadcaster simply made a mistake. But don't you verify that this promise was made via a news outlet? You look at all the New York news outlets and see, hey, was there really this like random promise for a pitcher to give out MacBooks for 2 innings? Don't you make sure that that happens? Instead, he got it off of a parody account, and went very Michael Scott. If you're familiar with The Office and you've seen the wildly uncomfortable episode of Scott's Tots, where he promised a group of second graders that he would pay for their college. 10 years later, he was broke and couldn't do so. This is very Scott's Tots-ish.
If it were real, right? Yeah, it
hey,
would
Mr.
be.
Scott, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Make our dreams come
oh
true?
Oh my gosh!
It's a great show.
Yeah, it was. That I really wish that it was real in a way, because it would make Garrett Cole look worse. And I am all for piling on Garrett Cole right now. I mean, who isn't? It's kind of funny. It's very, very funny at this point in time. I would say in the case with
Michael Scott?
No, Garrett Cole? No. This broadcast team that they were falling for it. This is what happens when you try to do multiple things at the same time.
Yep.
I am sure that this broadcaster, like us, had a bit of ADD in this moment, might have been scrolling through Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Saw it, didn't think to confirm it because he probably saw it had a ton of retweets and was like, oh, this is an interesting
must
part
be
of
real.
Our broadcast. Yeah. And also, I mean, let's be honest, like most baseball radio broadcasts are absolute snooze fest. I mean, they're putting you to sleep. It's why most people listen to my broadcast of the Astros winning the World Series as opposed to the actual flagship broadcast. Because, like, I'm actually entertaining. You know, I have energy.
What was your call?
I said, let's go, bitches. But I yelled it.
Love it. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, a certain offensive coordinator kind of puts his foot in his mouth. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, and we are rolling along on a Wednesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant alongside me. Our producer is Sean Mapes. This is, of course, Vanessa and Gallant. Every now and then you have a coach, an offensive coordinator that gives a little too much away. And it doesn't happen very often here in Houston. They're very tight-lipped, the coaching staff. And
I know. I wish they weren't. It would be fun.
It would be maybe a little bit more entertaining. Certainly not the case in Carolina. You have an owner that admitted that he paid Matt Rhule way too much money.
Did.
You have a lot of leaks that come from that organization. And what recently came was not necessarily a leak, but just kind of a whoops moment. Ben McAdoo, offensive coordinator, used to be a head coach. He was head coach of the Giants for 2 seasons. So I think he might have been in head coach mode when he said what we're about to play. But he was doing an interview, like a Zoom interview with media members, and said this about the quarterback position.
And you look at Sam as your starting quarterback?
Sam is our starting quarterback, yes.
1 minute, 37 seconds later.
You know, one of the things I've been working on is being better talking to you people. So, you know, announcing the starting quarterback here, I just put my foot in the mouth. So that wasn't something I should have said.
The minute that he said that Sam was the starting quarterback, you could see, if you look at the video, the regret wash over his face where he just kind of squints and is like, yeah, I shouldn't have said that. So he made sure to go back on it.
I like Ben McAdoo because he owned it. I mean, he probably has zero say in this at all. And he's being asked a question about something he has no say in. He's not the head coach. He's the offensive coordinator. And he has no idea what the hell the Panthers are about to do in the draft.
Right.
I mean, they're picking 6th overall. I would be really surprised if they don't draft the quarterback, because I don't think they have a 2nd or a 3rd round pick. So, I mean, what are they going to do early on? Probably draft the quarterback. That makes the most sense at this point in time. But what's he supposed to say? Like, Sam Darnold is the quarterback on the roster right now.
Right now, he is the starting quarterback
right.
in his defense.
And I mean, they haven't traded for Baker Mayfield yet either. So McAdoo has no idea what's going on, and I love him for it. I mean, this is the same guy who once came to a press conference, I think, with the New York Giants wearing the most baggy suit I've ever
right.
seen. It was like it was the early 2000s, like you're seeing with some NBA players. Yeah. Bro, get a tailor. Listen, sometimes you learn the hard way. Sometimes you learn getting shamed by your friends. I learned at a wedding myself. Like, I had a suit that I had gotten straight out of college, and my friends were like, what's wrong with you? You don't even tailor your suits. And I was like, I guess not.
One of your friends sent me a DM of you wearing a tie on a date.
Was this Brad?
This was not that long ago.
Kyle?
This was when our show had first started, and he's like, please roast your co-host for wearing a tie on a date. I think you were in Chicago.
Oh, We went out to a nice dinner. This is probably the same person who wears a this is my friend Kyle, who wears a hoodie, and the same hoodie that's always stained, and hats wherever he goes. So good on you,
but
Kyle.
You know what? I'm a nice co-host, because did I ever make fun of you for that?
No, you didn't, but now you are.
But I'm simply bringing it up.
We learn about fashion over time, and we learn about hair over time, and as I shift away from me, because I'm not bitter at all. Just kidding.
I like Finn McAdoo's hair. Well, he's split down the middle, got the nice.
It takes time to figure out your hair. Same thing for me. I used to have like this Japanese anime cartoon cut. I did. It was like spiky all over the place.
Sean Mapes, our producer, has great hair. He's got like Lance McCullers Jr., Mike McDaniel look in general, but the hair flows well.
I feel
like
you're going to play me a song right now and serenade me with some acoustic guitar.
Yeah. Anyway,
hey,
here's Wonderwall.
Me, John Mayer.
All right. It's now time for our segment that we like to call Wine Wednesday.
It's Wine Wednesday.
It's the Wine and Cheese Club, gorgeous, where we all get together and vent about what annoys us at work.
On Vanessa and Gallant.
What's your Wednesday wine?
Wine. All right. My Wine Wednesday is something that I feel very, very strongly about.
Okay. Is it the camera?
I've been a snob about straws since I was in like seventh grade. So I drink coffee, not just iced coffee. I drink hot coffee with straws. I drink everything with the straw, minus beer because I'm not a complete weirdo. But I drink everything with the straw because I want to keep my teeth white.
I do the exact same thing. See the straw I have right now? It's just like giant silicon straw.
Right. So I am very big on straws. I understand the environment matters. And I understand that the environment is important. But we have got to move past paper straws.
Whoa.
They don't work. They're disgusting. And 3 minutes into a hot drink, your drink tastes like cardboard. It's atrocious.
It's earthy.
It's... ew! I don't want earthy. I want plastic straws.
You
want
to kill the environment.
Yeah, or if you want to... I have a metal straw that I carry around that is a reusable straw that I wash. I'll use one of those. But I went to a bar in Indianapolis, and they were not giving out straws, quote-unquote, for the environment. So I had to sip my vodka tonic and not use a straw. Do you know how bad vodka tonic is for your teeth? Tonic is terrible for your teeth.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, anything carbonated, bad for your teeth.
You look badass. You look lame when you drink a drink with a straw.
No, but it protects your teeth, and that is all that matters. Do I look lame with a white smile? No. And so I expect a straw in every drink that I have. Of my choosing, and I'm tired of bars either not serving straws or serving their really crappy paper ones. They're disgusting. Elon Musk, Mark Cuban, all of the billionaires out there, if you're listening, look at me. We have to find a better alternative to paper straws. They're gross. Yes, I care about the environment,
no,
but honestly, it's on big companies to take care of the environment over the average citizen.
Well, that's true.
It's on big companies over me. Give me my regular straw back. And worry about BP and all of the companies. Like, get on them. Don't get on me. Give me my straw back.
Also,
I don't want to go to space. I want regular straws.
Also, how are plastic straws really hurting the environment more than like the entire plastic cup and the plastic plates? And there's so much plastic at these fast food restaurants, and then they give us paper straws because they see one
somewhere.
Picture of a turtle.
It's a conspiracy theory, and you know what? It is to shame the American public. Now again, I have a reusable straw. I'm not anti like do good things for the environment.
Except for the time I set fire to a forest.
It's about the fact that there are so many other things that we can do. And to your point, you're still being given a paper. If you go to Mickey D's, you're still being given a paper straw. Even if you're given, at Starbucks, they give out paper straws now. But they're still serving you in a plastic cup. If you get the sandwich, I prefer the turkey bacon non-fat sandwich. They're giving it to you in a paper bag. You use the bathroom. You're still using regular toilet paper. All of these things remain the same. They've just decided to zero in on straws. I don't understand.
Yeah, you look at like the environment and the climate change and stuff, and is there any graph that says, you know,
no.
If you just cut down on the
it's
plastic straws?
It's like PETA. It's not real. Well, it's like PETA. It's all a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Like
it's
PETA,
virtue signaling.
It is virtue signaling at its finest. Elon Musk, Mark Cuban, all of the billionaires out there that are worried about going to space and landing on the moon and doing all of that stuff, use that money to come up with a better solution than paper straws.
Yeah, or just better paper. like just a better version.
There's
of
no,
this.
There's no. I mean, you're putting paper in water.
No, that's the point. Yeah. Like, right? It has to be something. Better
I believe
paper
in science stuff. On this one.
No, I don't. What's your wine Wednesday?
I don't know. I feel like we should let you keep going with this straw rant. That was a great rant. Here's mine, and it's a quick one. I want to find whoever invented the snooze button, and I want them gone.
What?
Snooze button is the worst invention that's ever happened to
mankind.
You don't
like the snooze button?
No, because I'm addicted to it now. I can't stop doing the addict button. Vanessa, I spend $60 on this app for a whole year. This app that's supposed to keep you from pressing the snooze button. And even then, I have found a way to press the snooze button on this alarm. What I have to do is I have to shake my phone 50 times like I'm taking 50 steps. And then the alarm stops. And I still will not get out of bed. Because the idea of it, and then it'll go off 10 minutes later, and I'll stay in bed, and it's every single day. I can't get out of bed. I can't do it. I don't know if it's because my bed's too comfy or what, but...
You must have a nice bed.
It is. It's pretty good. It's not great. It's one of those old ones, too, that's got, like, the little recliner in the back, so you can, like, lean up and, you know, watch some television, though I never do that anymore. I always fall asleep on my couch these days, too, but...
Couch naps are elite.
Not if you're waking up at 4 and you're like, oh, I should have gone to bed. My bad. But yeah.
So you just stick your hand up while laying down in bed. You just stick your hand, you grab your phone, stick your hand up, and just start shaking your phone as you still refuse to get up.
I do this. It's like I'm doing bicep curls with my phone. And if
you
I
would
do
bicep curls,
it's good for definition.
If I do it, well, yeah, you know, makes the arms look a little more defined. But
low weight, high rep, yeah.
Legitimately have to do this 100 times. And it, the funny thing is, 10 minutes later, this app is called Alarmy. And it did work at first. And then I figured out how to do the snooze button. And whoever invented the snooze button, jail.
Death
right away.
To snooze button?
And to
definitely
paper straws.
Death to paper straws. And death to whoever invented paper straws.
People are saying I like shake weights. That's true.
Yeah, shake weights are cool.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
What? That's a shake weight.
All right.
Moment.
You know, I hate paper straws, but what I do not hate, TGS insurance. Listen to me if you own your home. You pay too much for home insurance, but you probably don't shop for better rates because it's a hassle. Doesn't have to be, guys. Thanks to TGS insurance. They have a new system. It instantly shops 36 carriers, and you get a full quote in 15 seconds. All you have to do is send that single text to save a bunch of money. So take out your phone and text the word money, that's M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. Send in your home address. And you're going to get that full quote again within 15 seconds or less. This company is legit. The savings are legit. And the online rating is almost perfect. Their average customer from last year saved over $870. No one likes to shop for home insurance, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been. One more time, text money to 232323. Get your home insurance quote at Save Big today.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Oh, God, I love having everybody say that I hate the sea turtles. Oh,
you
Vanessa
do.
Doesn't care about animals. I just think that they're...
You just clubbed a seal in the back of the head in the break.
There are better alternatives than paper straws. You guys are crazy.
I do agree with you in that. It is funny that is... That is the place.
That's the angle
where they're taking their stand. Is with straws. Legitimately, these tiny little things. The cups, for the most part, though, are paper. At a lot of these fast food places.
I mean, I'm looking at two things from Starbucks: a plastic water bottle and a plastic cup.
Right. That's you killing the environment. That's not me. See me. See the cups I have. Aluminum.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Paul, you know what? You lived in Seattle. That's why you're doing
that. It stuff. Is. The first day at that job in Seattle, I accidentally put a paper cup in the trash.
Wait, how'd that... Are you being serious? Did
and
that
I
go-
was... I was... This was like on... Yeah, I was essentially reprimanded for it. This was my interview.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, the head
so they're
of HR,
about it there.
They said, we don't do that here. And I mean, I kept doing it afterwards.
Oh, wow. I do care about the environment. I just think that there are better ways to go about than paper straws that taste nasty and ruin your $4 Starbucks drink. I'm sorry.
Better ways. I think it's over. We lost. Like, this place is going to be uninhabitable in 100 years, and I don't care. You know what? Just go
you won't
with
be
it.
There.
Right.
All right. So, meanwhile, Deshaun Watson, not a huge story.
Sorry, kids.
But there are a lot of players that are stubborn about giving their numbers up. That apparently will not be an issue. According to 92.3 The Fan, which is in Cleveland, linebacker Anthony Walker Jr. passed his number 4 jersey number to Deshaun Watson, said, quote, I reached out to him. I told him right away the number's his. Obviously, the number 4 means a lot to me, but it's your quarterback at the end of the day. That's your franchise QB. You understand that.
Is he getting paid?
Watson will wear number 4. I don't know. He should ask for
that.
Money from Watson. He should. After Watson gets $230 million guaranteed.
I have no idea who that guy is. No offense to him. He might be a good player.
Yeah.
This is no disrespect. How often is that guy going to have an opportunity to get an extra, I don't know, couple G's? Deshaun Watson can clearly afford it with the contract that he just signed.
Oh, but he has legal fees and all that cash isn't in his hand right now, Paul.
He can still do that. If he cares so much about number 4, I would say, pay me for it. And I would probably accept any offer, but I would want him to, at the very least, have the common courtesy to offer me money for that, as opposed to being some entitled person coming in expecting me to genuflect and give my number away to him.
But let's be honest. Do we think that Deshaun offers, or do you think Deshaun says, thanks, bro?
Yeah, I don't know how many questions Deshaun Watson asks. He does seem to be very entitled, allegedly, in certain aspects of his life.
Meanwhile, Kevin Stefanski and select Brown players meeting with the media today. My friend Bailey Burmaster has been live tweeting some of these press conferences. Not much on Baker.
That's a name.
What?
I like the name, the alliteration.
Bailey Burmaster. It is a really good name. She's at Bayberm TV on Twitter. Follow her. Love her. Stefanski says the situation with Baker Mayfield is, quote, unique and fluid.
It sure is unique. That's
it is
damn
very
sure.
unique. And the word fluid, I think, is a good, I mean, it's basically fluid. We know what fluid means. It means it's changing.
Not fluid,
it means it's
fluid,
change.
Right.
Yeah. So, means it could change. It means it is changing or, you know, is on the track to not be something that is typical. It definitely is unique because I don't see a team where Baker is going right now. He doesn't seem highly desired. Jeff Darlington on ESPN this morning said that if he got cut, that the Steelers would pick him up.
There are tons of teams that actually would pick him up if he were to be cut. But the big problem is, who wants to trade for the final year of his contract when he is limited as far as what more he can give you? I feel like the Browns should hold on to him as long as they possibly can and hope that someone gets hurt, which is kind of messed up, but that's the only way that they're going to get anything in return
for
him.
And that's the only way he starts, is if somebody gets hurt. I don't think he's a starting quarterback in this league unless he goes to a team where someone's down.
These clowns think they're going to get a first-round pick, though, supposedly.
Andrew Berry and the Browns?
That's at least what was put out at first after the Watson trade happened. Like, the Browns think that they're going to get a first-round pick, and I'm sorry. No, there's another option available that's not named Baker Mayfield in Jimmy Garoppolo. So, at best, you're getting a fourth-round pick for a one-year rental of a quarterback who will likely end up being a free agent at the end of the year.
The Steelers would sign Baker Mayfield, quote, the very next day if he was cut, per Jeff Darlington. And I do trust Jeff Darlington's sources, and I know he's very plugged in the NFL. What if Baker Mayfield went to the team who they beat in the playoffs a couple years ago?
That would be something else. I think he would fit in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely in Pittsburgh.
He is hard-nosed and tough. He's not great, but he's better than what Ben Roethlisberger's been the last couple of seasons, too. If I'm the Steelers, yeah, I'm going to even make the offer. Like, why not? And if you're the Browns, are you that nervous about trading Baker Mayfield for not that much in return?
Yeah, and Jeff Darlington's talking about if Baker were to get cut, because remember, Baker wanted to get cut. But to your point, I mean, a trade makes way more sense.
Yeah, just trade him. And honestly, just take whatever you can get at this point in time. No one is going to take him for what you want. Honestly, I don't even think you would get a fifth or a sixth. You're probably getting a seventh, whatever.
This is a morbid question, but after Dwayne Haskins passed away, do they have another quarterback on that roster that they've...
Yeah, Mitchell Trubisky.
Well, but that they've, you know, filled Dwayne's absence with.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
not
I don't
to
think
this
they
point.
Have either.
No. And look, I mean, if that was the competition to begin with, you could have done better. Like, just speaking from a strictly football perspective.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then Mason Rudolph's the other guy who's in there. I mean, all of those guys are not good quarterbacks. So Baker Mayfield's an upgrade over all of them. The Steelers should just make some phone calls. But maybe, I guess, making a phone call keeps the Browns from actually doing that, pulling the trigger on Baker Mayfield and just cutting him. But it makes more sense for Cleveland to just move on. You know, like, that's not, you're not going to get any really thing of value. So it just makes you look bad that you cut the first overall draft pick quarterback that you had.
The situation with Baker Mayfield, unique and fluid for head coach Kevin Stefanski. All right, Barstool Sports tweeting out a video about Jokic getting mad when his butt gets slapped during a game. Steph Curry kind of had to get in the way. It looked like he was going to confront him.
Yeah. Jokic,
very weird.
Jokic and the Nuggets are done. I mean, there's no Jamal Murray. There's no Michael Porter Jr. They're just...
But Jokic, he's pretty emotional anyway. Yeah. So do you think that he was doing this him up?
No, he's just being a baby. I mean, the guy gave him a congratulatory butt slap.
And he got mad.
This is something I talked about yesterday on my own Twitch show. I was trying to figure out why the hell did butt slaps become such a big part of sports? And there was no actual reason.
You couldn't find the history.
I looked and I looked and I looked and no one can figure it out. There's lots of interesting stories that have to do with butt slapping. I guess Ron Jaworski, former Eagles quarterback, was a notorious butt slapper. He liked to slap that ass. There are rules for what is too much and what it shouldn't be done when it comes to slapping a butt. Like, you're not supposed to cup the butt. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to get in the middle. It's one cheek only.
Oh.
But I wasn't able to find out why this became such a thing in sports. Who hasn't had that happen? I know as a high school football player. It's kind of weird in retrospect thinking about it especially
so
in cancel culture, but like, you know, an adult man smacking a teenager on the butt for making a play on the field. I mean, that's what happened.
Are we past that in society? I think we are. I think you stop slapping butts. I'm not offended by it. Make no mistake. I'm not saying I think you should be canceled if you do it. I'm not offended. I just think it's dumb. And it's so weird how we allow things on the court and on the field that if you did it in real life would be a no-go. Handshake lines? Don't need them. Slapping on the butt, don't need it.
But in some situations, it's fine, right?
Like slapping on the butt? No, do a high five.
Okay.
Do a fist bump.
Okay.
Do a shake.
I don't think we're on the same wavelength here on that front.
Fine with slapping butts.
I'm just...
Paul is a butt slapper.
All I am saying... is that it's interesting that this became such a thing in sports. In sports, right.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, too. In sports, I don't think it's necessary anymore.
Okay, gotcha, okay.
I think there are enough handshakes and enough, like, you could even do, like the COVID. I don't think you need to do handshake lines. I don't think you need to slap people's butts.
Handshake lines are all right.
I think they're dumb.
Interesting. Vanessa
Not
Richardson
needed.
Hates the environment and sportsmanship.
Do I think that they're, like, a quote-unquote good example for kids? I guess, but, I mean, we've seen... Yeah, it's just
no
need to slap anybody's butt. Do a high five, do a G shake, do a fist bump.
Oh, what's a G shake?
Like when people are like,
oh,
it's usually not.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that before, but now there's a terminology for it.
A G shake. Like it's usually two athletes that do it. It's not two mid-20s white people.
I wish I was in my mid-20s. Thank you for rubbing in my age once again. But it's weird. I mean, spanking is generally a punishment, generally, and somehow butt slaps became a thing in sports. Like, who? I can't be the only person that's just like, how did this become so accepted? And there's no actual explanation as to how it became a thing.
So you wonder how it became a thing, but you're fine with it.
I don't. Yeah, it's not. It's not the. It's so accepted. It's just guys being guys, I guess.
I just think we're past it. I think it's odd. Like, you should stick with a good old fist bump.
I'm not disagreeing that it's odd.
Hey,
it's
whatever
really
you're
odd.
Into is whatever you're into. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we finish up with some garbage time, and we are talking about a former Lakers legend who is very mad about the way he's being portrayed. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, yeah, Paul, whatever you're into, that's fine. Oh, we're back. It's Vanessa. kidding.
Clap cheeks.
On ESPN 97.5.
It's what athletes do.
And 90, it's weird.
To
and
celebrate.
92.5. You can, of course, hear us on the ESPN app, and you can stream us on Twitch. Okay.
My coach used to slap my butt and say, "Was that a babe?" after I made a play.
It's just not necessary anymore. We can do so much with our hands.
Okay. Well, Vanessa. Want to expand on that? Sign language, of course.
Breaking
right, that's
news.
What you're talking about. Oh, breaking news.
Breaking news.
Is this actually breaking news?
This is real breaking news. This is from Jeff Darlington of ESPN. He tweets, "I just spoke to wide receiver Deebo Samuel, and he told me that he has asked the 49ers to trade him."
Wow.
"He did not want to discuss specific reasons behind his request, but he has indeed let the 49ers know his desire to leave the organization. More to come."
So that's real. Okay, I saw this yesterday. Some people were hinting at it, that maybe Deebo Samuel would ask out entirely of San Francisco. But I didn't actually believe it. I figured it was just posturing to get a new deal.
That is what it usually is.
Right. And it, there's still a chance it could be. But if someone that plugged in is reporting it, I'm assuming he heard directly from him. And I guess now the craziest NFL offseason of our lifetime would continue. I would think that the team most likely to pull the trigger on a trade like that would be the New York Jets, given that they tried to trade for Tyreek Hill and given that they also have two top 10 picks. So I feel like the Jets are probably the team that will try to do this.
It could be. Field Yates tweeting out a picture of all teams, all 32 teams, saying, "I put together a graphic of teams that should try to trade for Deebo Samuel." Yeah, I mean, he's good. He's productive. We'll see what happens, but that's the latest from Jeff Darlington, Deebo Samuel wanting out of Cali.
Here's a question. Would you trade the 13th overall pick, if you're the Houston Texans, for Deebo Samuel? Because I wouldn't heartbeat. I don't even think twice. In fact, I would think about some of my other draft picks. That guy is a hell of a player, and I know giving a wide receiver a big-time contract can sometimes be a big obstacle. We've seen that. But this guy is tough. Runs after the catch, unlike any wide receiver I've seen in the league since Terrell Owens. He blocks. He likes to hit people. He is everything I like in a wide receiver. Maybe the diva qualities, they're there like a lot of other guys, but I can understand why he wants to get paid. He can be used as a running back. He can be used as a wide receiver. He is an unbelievable player. He's probably my favorite non-Patriot, non-Texans player in the NFL. And
non-Seahawks, non-do the bandwagon team
well, non-Colts. So, essentially, this guy is the real deal. I would do bad things for him.
Oh, okay. Ian Rappaport tweeting, "Money is not at the root of the issue for Deebo Samuel. Otherwise, that could be fixed with a big offer. But there are also issues with how he's used."
My ass. That's coming from Deebo Samuel's agent. 100%. Yeah. I don't believe that. Money is not the issue.
Ian Rappaport is the mouthpiece for agents at the NFL.
And most of these guys are these days. So it's not to diminish Ian Rappaport for saying that. But money's not the issue. Okay, sure. Yeah. You just saw a bunch of wide receivers get huge contracts. And all of a sudden, he wants to be traded. It's not about money, though.
Meanwhile, Jerry West, not happy with how he's being portrayed in the show Winning Time.
Winning Time's a great show.
HBO.
I love it.
I still need to see it.
So here is a sample clip of what he's mad about. Jerry West on Winning Time. He doesn't like that he is being portrayed as a very, very angry man.
A star. I can pass behind my back, over my head. I can pass it out my if you want it. Do you know what? You want to know what it got me? Do you want to know what it got me? It got me. It got me this. A booby prize. Here it is. Oh, hey, welcome him in. Here he is. Jerry West, MVP, the most valuable loser award. 1969 Celtics 4, Lakers 3, Jerry West.
Okay, so Jerry West did have anger issues back in the day. That much is known. He had some depression issues. Jerry West's lawyers want a, quote, immediate retraction, and they are demanding that they retract and make it clear that that's not how Jerry West was, allegedly.
It's a television show. Shut up.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar also, who is... you hate Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is one of those guys who takes himself way too seriously. Dude, you're a basketball
player.
But he's
very well-spoken, very well-thought out. And
very boring.
What he put out was, instead of exploring his mental health-type issues with compassion as a way to better understand the man, they turn him into Wile E. Coyote cartoon
drama.
To be laughed at.
Yes.
He never broke golf clubs. He didn't throw his trophy through the window.
It's a fictional version of the show.
It is. I mean,
and it's good. It's very entertaining. That's the point of the show.
Don't these guys have to sign off before they're portrayed in shows, or am I wrong?
I don't think so. No, it's a fictionalization of it.
So I think it's based off the book, but obviously pretty loosely based off of a book about the Showtime Lakers. So I wonder if, since they've already been portrayed in the book, they don't have to sign off on the TV stuff. I don't know how that works, but yeah, for sure. The fact that all the former Lakers hate this show makes me want to watch it even more. That they're all like, no, this isn't actually how it was, because now Magic's making his own documentary, which is obviously going to be the most sanitized version of the Magic Johnson story.
That's why it's going to be so boring, is because it's going to be Magic Johnson's version of events, which is essentially he'll be like, I used to sleep with a couple of women, when we know that it was way more wild than that.
Yeah, at the same time, maybe. Yeah. I definitely want to get around to watch the HBO show.
I love it. It's really good. I highly recommend it if you haven't watched it already. And yeah, it's not historically accurate. I don't care. The show's really entertaining, and that's what I'm looking for. This is the best, in terms of sheer entertainment, sports TV show that's been on since Friday Night Lights.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that good?
It's really good.
Okay,
it's obviously
a
totally different kind of vibe, but it's funny. It takes you back in time. It makes you nostalgic. And I think the guy who plays Magic Johnson does a great job. I think the guy who plays Kareem Abdul-Jabbar does a great job. Like, they really seem to nail their mannerisms.
John C. Reilly, isn't it, right?
John C. Reilly plays Jerry Buss, and he's the star of the show. He's fantastic in it. It's been really enjoyable. The guy that they had play Larry Bird came out of nowhere. It was great. Michael Chiklis plays Red Auerbach. I really enjoyed it. And they made the Celtics and
Jerry
everyone
Buss
from Boston look like terrible people. And I've still enjoyed the show thus far.
Jerry Buss was wild.
Clearly. I wish I was Jerry Buss.
Jerry Buss left his Malibu mansion to one of his shoddies. All right. It is time for garbage time. We're going to take you through some of these stories in the day that we didn't have time to get to during this show. Mm. And we start with Jimmy G taking a photo with the Hooters waitress. 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo, amid NFL uncertainty, posed for a nice picture with the Hooters waitress after playing 18 at the local country club.
Well, whose dad hasn't done that before? You know, that does seem to be the kind of, the taking a picture with Hooters waitresses, that's a weird look. Okay, but you see John Daly doing it a lot too, you know, because he's constantly at the Hooters. And is it in Augusta, or is there a Hooters in Augusta?
Isn't John Daly monetarily attached to Hooters, like sponsor wise and all of that?
Not just John Daly, but John Daly Jr.
Yeah.
is also, he signed an NIL deal with
God
with
bless
Hooters.
America.
Okay.
John Daly Jr. signing a deal with Hooters is the most American thing I've ever heard.
This is something I touched on briefly yesterday. So there is this festival called the Revolve Festival, which took place at Coachella. It was an influencer-only invite event.
Sounds like my worst nightmare.
Well, for them, it apparently was their worst nightmare, because these little losers who are extremely soft, Generation Z, I just don't respect you, were comparing it to Firefest because, get this, they had to wait 2 hours for a bus. And they're like, this is the worst thing that I've ever seen. I am an influencer, and I should have been at this event right away. And
spoiled.
All these people who didn't matter.
Go play outside.
They get to go. Yeah, I actually went down on a deep dive of some of the people complaining about it on TikTok yesterday, and I wanted to throw myself off a bridge.
So you're complaining about Gen Z, but you do your deep dives via TikTok. Sean Mapes, back me up.
Well, I study the culture as someone who is curious.
Yeah, you study the culture.
You're very curious about 23-year-olds.
He is. TikToks. He studies the culture in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Very curious.
Arizona.
You're an anthropologist,
no comment,
really.
That's
on the matter.
Damn sure. He studies the culture of blondes
no
in Arizona
comment.
State.
No comment.
Oh, wow, these influencers, huh?
Listen, I studied very hard.
Does his research.
Very.
Oh, God.
Oh. Oh. He's on the ground. All right. Elon Musk says he doesn't own a home and he sleeps in his friend's spare bedrooms. I can't stand Elon Musk. I think he's a freaking weirdo.
Get out of here, Elon Musk.
Yeah, he's obnoxious and
but
I don't
buy
believe
Twitter.
Him.
Thank you.
No, I don't believe him. And I don't believe most of what he says. I think he has issues.
I'd like it. Well, who doesn't? I'd like him to buy Twitter.
Why?
Because I like seeing everyone get so mad about the fact that he's trying to buy Twitter. It's generally the same people that I get annoyed by with a lot of the opinions they have.
Yeah, well,
that
keep,
makes sense.
Keep doing your research, Paul. Paul's gonna.
I'm
get
telling
his,
you,
Paul's getting his PhD in the Scottsdale flu.
Okay. Listen, I'm telling you, just do a deep dive on these kids that went to the Revolve Festival. They're the absolute worst people ever. They've got like a million followers on TikTok, and I'm just wondering how.
And they probably love paper straws, don't they? Because they want to save the turtles.
Oh, yeah. Some of them, one of them is the youngest member of the anti-discrimination council in Dallas and wanted to let everybody know that.
I'm all for anti-discrimination, though. That's a little bit
But she
different.
Was bragging about that because like someone's commented, people are dying. And she said, like, well, I'm on a council in Dallas.
Oh, God, I'm sure you are,
sweetheart.
What
are you doing?
All right, that wraps up another episode of Vanessa and Gallant. Up next, you have the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham. Have a great Wednesday, everybody.
Peace.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!